Hey guys, Maestro here, and I wanted to personally invite you to Rockstock 2018, the movement experience of the year. Join us in sunny Miami Beach, Florida on October 27th and 28th for movement, laughter, dancing, music, fun, and yes, you will get CEUs. The lineup is absolute fire, including yours truly and your boy, Dr. John Campione. So head on over to rocktape.com, use the code RTPodcasters18, and save yourself $100. Yeah, $100. I'll see you there.
What's up, everybody? My name is John Campione. Thank you so much for downloading the Rock Tape Podcast. Today, my guest is Carl Sterling. Carl is an amazing personal trainer who, through unique roads traveled, came to specialize working with Parkinson's patients. I had a great discussion with Carl about his life, his career, and we talked a lot about treating the person rather than the pathology they're labeled with. Honestly, my introduction cannot do him justice. Let's get right to talking with Carl, and I'll talk to you a little bit more on the other side.
So sitting here with Carl Sterling, Carl, welcome. You do such really cool things. We've seen you, for those of us who follow you on social media, with a great deal of work that you do with Parkinson's patients and the neurology that you utilize with a lot of your exercise and working with those patients. But give us a little insight into kind of your background, your training, you know, how you grew up in this field and what really got you into training.
Oh, okay. So I'll give you the shortest version I can of this.
All right.
Hopefully under 1 minute. So I actually was a musician for most of my life, for over 35 years, a drummer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So actually what happened is I just got very unhealthy, very out of shape, obese. I weighed close to 280 pounds. I'm 6'2". Mm-hmm. So if you do the math, that's not too good.
Yeah.
So I was heading down kind of a not a good path. My doctor at a physical had a conversation with me at 1.8 years ago or so, and said, "Dude," he's a friend of mine, he's like, "You need to make some serious changes because you're heading down a bad road. You know, pre-diabetic, high blood pressure, and very close to having COPD, even though I was not ever a smoker."
Wow.
It scared me. I called a trainer, my friend Eric Prager, who lives close to me. I knew he would help me out. And so fast forward, 6 months later, I'd lost like 30, 35 pounds, felt really good. I decided keep training with Eric, but also become a trainer so I could help people, because I was really burned out in the music scene. I just really, isn't what I wanted to do anyways, mm-hmm. But I didn't think I could do anything else. So I studied and actually went through and did the NASM personal trainer certification. And then I started getting in front of clients probably about 6 months after that, because I just wasn't feeling like I knew what to do. But, you know, that's what got me into training, was being unhealthy.
Yeah. That's such a cool way to say that, honestly, because I think that's a lot of people's stories.
Yeah. And then this whole thing with Parkinson's, it was total accident. I didn't plan any of this stuff. So I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Brent Brookbush, but he's a very good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I actually used to teach for him, and I just stopped recently only because I don't have time. I would love to continue, but I just don't have time. Well, I knew him before I was a trainer, because he was a jazz musician and I was a jazz musician, right? Oh, wow. So a lot of people don't know that about Brent, but he was a jazz trombone player. Serious badass trombone player.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So he has been a mentor of mine all along, the whole way. And so I had some really good, obviously some great mentorship. So that helped me become a much better trainer, kind of like a fast track to learning a lot of great things with his help. And then the Parkinson's thing was an accident, because I went back to school a few years ago at Syracuse University. to study nutrition because I thought, you know, I can help people with weight loss and all this kind of stuff. But dietary lifestyle is just as important as exercise, or if not more. When I went back to school a few years ago, one of my professors asked if I would train him because he knew I was a trainer, and he has Parkinson's disease, and that began everything.
So just that little spark of helping one person kind of evolved everything that you're doing right now.
Yeah. So the last part of this story as how it began is like this. It just so happened, coincidentally, my son was probably about 6 months into doing his Parkinson's research, which now he has his PhD in Parkinson's research. Mm. So I reluctantly said yes to my first ever Parkinson's client. His name is Jerry. Jerry is awesome. He's still a client and a good friend. But I reluctantly said yes because I didn't know what to do. You know, like, I don't want to hurt him. Mm-hmm. And so I called my son, and he helped me and pointed me in the right direction, connected me with people who could help and guide me down the path. And then it just began this thing. And then the next part of the story, and then I can be quiet for a minute, is I always wanting to know more and learn more. I decided, how am I going to get in front of people and just learn as much as possible? Like, how can I do this? And so I decided to start a podcast, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I asked like a doctor or somebody to have coffee with me and share their knowledge, it just didn't seem like the right thing to do, and not that they would even do it. But a podcast where I can share their information with my audience or create an audience and share it with the world. Well, I'll tell you, that really helped a lot. I got out. I met so many people. I think we're up to like 84 interviews right now. And so that's where I actually had the connection with Rock Tape is Dr. Steve Capobianco, our friend. I love Steve.
Steve's the
best. I interviewed him and Adam Wolf. And it's like, whoa, man, I'm learning so much from these amazing people. So there's so many people who have helped to have input into the program that I do to make it become what it has become. And I'm grateful for all these people.
You have a great list of people right there to really kind of learn from. And, you know, learning from you has been a great experience as well. And because you're dealing with such a important condition, and it's a pretty interesting specialty that you don't see from a lot of trainers. You mentioned that you felt apprehensive treating or training a Parkinson's patient. Tell me a little bit about how, with the help of your son and his PD research and some of the other resources, how did it start to kind of become a specialty into training Parkinson's patients?
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, I just wanted to learn as much as possible. So my son, Nick, introduced me to his boss at the time, Dr. Shumei Wong. Shumei Wong is an amazing lady. She did some work with Muhammad Ali for a period of time. Great, great stories about Muhammad Ali from her.
Yeah.
You know, I talked with her. I interviewed her. I got to know a lot from her and then other people who they connected me with and started utilizing these different ideas and techniques and strategies, mostly about working towards retraining the brain. So the brain can, you know, this neuroplasticity is so cool, right? We have the ability to create new neural firing connections and patterns. And when we do that, if we can work towards creating these patterns to help improve, let's say, dual tasking, multitasking, and then reduce risk of falling. So I just take, as I was learning, I would take this and work with Jerry and try these things. And sure enough, although he has still never fallen, which I'm so glad about, there are a lot of times he has almost fallen, but he's able to recover and not hit the ground. Like, he doesn't fall down.
Yeah.
And that's what we want. You know, once you become a faller, or once you fall, they define you as a faller. So you really want to avoid falling for anybody, right?
Yeah.
Parkinson's or not. And of course, what we do, I'll go off on a side note here. This stuff is for anyone and everyone. It doesn't have to be somebody with Parkinson's, but it just so happens that falls are our number one concern for a person with Parkinson's. So going back around here, circling back, gradually each person I would meet, I would learn more. We would do more. And as clients were seeing, well, Jerry and his neurologist and people see results, we start to get referrals. Oh, I know a person with Parkinson's. Can you work with them? Yes. And then more and more. So it became into like in our area, we're the people. You have Parkinson's or movement disorder, you come to us. We'll help you because we're always out there trying to learn as much as possible to help.
It's a great marketing tactic to be the guy for that one particular thing, right?
Yeah, it actually wasn't the goal, but now it is. I mean, it just sort of came around to being that's just how it is, or how, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how it was, how it is.
So it's interesting with how you kind of get the patients coming back. They have a Parkinson's diagnosis, and you know that. So what sort of assessment process do you as their trainer take them through when you already have all this medical information that's coming with them?
Yeah, it's real interesting. So for trainers out there, I'm sure you're familiar with this. They have what they call the physical active, let's see. It's called the PARQ.
Yeah.
Physical activeness ready questionnaire or something. I don't remember the actual words. I have my own version of PARQ, which is about 40 questions additional from the normal one, because I want to know everything I can about, let's say, their health history, but their current, challenges that they're facing. Mm-hmm. Have they ever fallen? If so, tell me about it. Do they have a fall journal? Because they keep a fall log. Some do. They can see some patterns starting to develop, like, oh, we fall when we're rotating, or we fall when we're trying to stop, or when we get to a doorway. So there's the PARQ aspect. Then they come in and we just sit down and, you know, I have this thing. It's probably the only thing I ever thought of that's original in my whole life. It's called Carl's Take Me Through Your Day Assessment. You wake up in the morning, you open your eyes. What's the first problem you face? And it's not uncommon to hear somebody say, oh, rolling over in bed. It's like, I teach this Parkinson's workshop all over the world. And it's so interesting because we'll have people with Parkinson's come in, and almost every time we'll have somebody who can't roll over. I have to credit Dr. Perry Nicholson here because he taught me the rolling patterns and I modified them for Parkinson's, but they come from Perry. And basically every single time, without fail, people are now able to roll after our first session. And I'm not performing any miracle. All we're doing is showing how to leverage the body to propel itself, to get itself over. And it's not rocket science, but if you don't know, you don't know. And then you struggle and you fight and then your caregiver. That can be a real backbreaker sometimes for the caregivers.
Yeah.
And so I'm going off a little bit because that's what I do. I'll come back to your question.
We love that here. Go for it.
I know you're talking assessments, so we're going to get back to that. But when you think about it, one of the best things, one of the most rewarding things ever, is when you have somebody who comes in who feels defeated by the disease, but then they gain an ability, let's say it's to walk better or rotate or roll over, and they couldn't do it before. Mm-hmm. Not only do they gain the ability, but they become a fighter. They emotionally, everything changes, and yeah. they see hope. And then, I mean, sometimes we're crying at these workshops because, you know, people are like, oh, my gosh, I haven't run in 15 years. And now I just ran across the room, or I just rolled over. And that is the coolest thing in the whole world, because now it affects not only the person, but their caregiver, their family, their friends, their coworkers. It's a ripple effect. So we try to do that. Take me through your day assessment and just work towards conquering have two or three problems that they or challenges they face on a daily basis, train towards those, mm-hmm. to accomplishing those. But we'll do other things too. I mean, I say in my Parkinson's workshops, you know, people with Parkinson's are people too. Parkinson's does not define a person. They are a person with Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. Just like cancer doesn't define anybody, or any other disease or movement disorder. So we can do the overhead squat assessment. We can do some of the, Dr. Emily Splickle, a dear friend, has some amazing assessments for the lower extremities, ankle, subtalar joint, leg length discrepancy. We can go through some balance testing. We can also do a lot of the fall risk testing, like the TUG test, timed up and go, the Berg balance scale, yeah, the mini best test. And this helps us to get an idea of where they are in their ability to move, and let's say assess their risk of falling. So we'll go through a lot of those different things. We'll do a gait assessment as well, because a lot of times it will be compromised, maybe shuffly. They may freeze during surface changes on floors or doorways and things like that. So there are a lot of assessments, and it can help us to gain knowledge, obviously, so we can design the right programming.
You know, it's so interesting how you talk about that. I'm just sitting there and listening, and what I think a lot of people really need to pay attention to as they listen to you say that is you're doing a lot of things that you would do with just any regular, if for lack of a better term, any regular client that comes in. These are all tests, gait analysis, the ParQ. These are all things that you would do on just about anybody because you want to see what they're able to do. And I think that a lot of trainers are really scared when they have someone come to them with a condition, especially a condition like Parkinson's, and they go, I don't know what to do. Well, do what you're trained. Ask them to move.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it can be intimidating for sure.
Absolutely.
And I was, my first few clients every time was, I was biting my nails, so to speak, right? But they're people. I mean, I say it again, people with Parkinson's are people too. Mm-hmm. So don't allow that to define them. And trainers, I think when I say that, some trainers, they already know, but, or physios or whatever, sometimes they think, oh yeah, you know, I can't let this define somebody because I mean, well, maybe they had cancer. Maybe they have tight calves. I mean, maybe, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like normal people. Maybe they have a hip replacement. Yeah. So we need to address them as people because that's what they are. And they happen to have Parkinson's, and we know it's a higher risk of fall. So we go through assessments to figure out fall risk. Because as Brent says too, I mean, I'm trying to say respectfully here to the trainer community, but if you're not assessing, you are guessing.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
You know, gotta assess. Mm-hmm.
Assessment is king. If you don't know what you're doing, it doesn't really matter what tool you're using.
Exactly. And, you know, there are a lot of assessments out there. So many that I don't even know, and I keep learning, and I love it. You know, yeah. Some of the vestibular stuff that Adam Wolf showed me was amazing. So yeah. I do some resets. Some of the visual stuff is amazing.
I want to kind of ask you about that because this is something that I love. Visual vestibular assessment and exercises too. I'm curious, are there any particular things that you look for with the visual system and the vestibular system on these patients?
All right. So with visual, I'll just be honest and say there's only one thing I know how to do.
Okay.
That's the pencil push-up.
Yeah.
I mean, we can also take the pencil and we can move it and have them move their eyes.
Sure.
Or we can hold the pencil still and have them move their heads but keep their eye on the pencil. Mm-hmm. But with the pencil push-up, where we're bringing the pencil towards the midline, the bridge of the nose, and we're trying to have the eyes track and keep the pencil as one, mm-hmm, for as long as possible, then we can actually watch which eye tracks better if one tracks better. And then through, it might come from Z-Health or something. Other people, too, though, who do this, that you can go through a reset for the eyes and then do the pencil push-up again, and they're better. Like, this takes 2 minutes, and it doesn't mean they're perfect. You do it again, make some more progress. I even had somebody do it to me, because I'm famous for dropping anything anyone throws at me, because I've had my own vision issues over the years. But man, once they reset, I'm like 90%, I'm catching the ball. It's really awesome. So we also know that, and tell me if I'm talking too much, because there's so much I could just talk about.
Not at all.
It's what I do. Well, we know that in Parkinson's disease, the substantia nigra is part of the brain that is losing brain cells. It's a very primal, primary movement center of the brain. And it's also a place that produces dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter, a chemical messenger, which if we don't have enough dopamine because cells are dying, then movement becomes awkward. And there is dopamine that's actually present in the retina. So if we have a lack of dopamine in the retina, then that can affect our vision, our depth perception, peripheral vision, all kinds of things. So I will say again, I only know the pencil push-up. I only know one reset that works well. It's an area that I'm studying, and I will definitely be doing more and teaching more because it's very powerful. And that and vestibular is just amazing stuff.
It's really cool. You're illustrating kind of what a lot of people know the pencil push-up as an exercise, but you kind of talked about how you can use it as an assessment. And I mean, that's just goes back to, you know, you can use all this stuff in any way you need to gain the information that you want.
Yeah, totally. There's so much out there I need to learn. I just can't wait to learn it all.
That's isn't that the fun of it though? That's the fun of it. Is that there's so many things. I have a stack of books and they're like, I need to read these and go on this. And then somebody I talk to is, oh crap, there's more stuff I need to learn.
It's really just amazing, the information, the good information that's out there. I mean, we know there's a lot of garbage, but there's a lot of good stuff. Mm-hmm. Vestibular stuff, I only know one thing, and it's what Adam Wolf showed me. And it's just basically putting the head in a couple different, three different positions. You could go more than three, but you're testing the strength of somebody. Let's say they put their arms out in front, and then you push down, and they resist you with all their might, and they do it in a looking straight ahead. Then they left ear to left shoulder, push down, right ear to right shoulder, push down. Whatever side was they were positionally weakest, you lay them on that side and do the barbecue roll.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. So what you're describing is you're doing just a general muscle test against canal stimulation for in the vestibular apparatus.
Exactly. And here I was with Adam in a restaurant having a beer and a burger or something in New Jersey last year, and he did it to me right there. It's like, dude, this is so powerful. It was just amazing. You know, it's like, I'm doing this starting tomorrow with every person I meet. And it's amazing.
I knew just as you were saying that, knowing Adam, it's like you guys did this in the restaurant, didn't you?
We did, yeah. And I think Mark Carangelo was with us. He owns the American Institute of Alternative Medicine in New Jersey. Amazing place, amazing guy. Mm-hmm. It was so much fun. So, I mean, that's all I do with vestibular as far as testing and reset, but it's powerful because not only do people get stronger, but they walk better, they move better when their vision's better and their vestibular is better.
Yeah, those are two high-level systems that can really I don't want to say fix, I don't like the word, but they can really help improve so many different things with someone's movement. So whether it be a Parkinson's patient or just an athlete trying to get a little bit stronger, that's something to really, really look into.
Yeah, it's so cool. So we, you know, the workshop series came about a couple of years ago just by people asking, do you teach Parkinson's workshops? And the answer was no. I was teaching for Emily Spickle at the time, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. I started up a teacher in barefoot level one and two programs, and it's like, I love this. I love that stuff. And then I wrote a program, and I can't even believe it, but it's taken off, and we're all over the globe now. And it's really fun to go and travel and meet people. I was in Argentina last week with my good friend and one of my instructors, Silvana Pacheco. She's amazing. Only one person in the group other than Silvana spoke English, but I'm working on my Espanol, practicar mi Espanol todos los días. But I, you know, we're sharing knowledge with them, but they have their own stuff they're doing there, you know. And like in Europe, it's the same thing. In England, Ireland, Scotland, and Mexico, I go to Mexico often, and it's just so cool to be able to go and share this, but also learn what others are doing and bring it back, you know?
It's the great thing about what we do is we teach, but we also learn so much from the people that we're supposedly going to be teaching.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. It's the coolest thing ever.
It's fantastic. I was taking a look at physiochainseducation.com. If you guys haven't checked that out, go check that out. But there's a lot of wealth of information in here. And just looking at some of the tabs you can go on is brain exercises, visual vestibular library, a lot of your movement videos, vibration therapy. So let's talk about some of the different treatment styles outside of what you've already mentioned with the vestibular system and the visual system. What are some of the things that you're doing specifically with Parkinson's patients after you've assessed them? Are there any particular go-tos that you utilize outside of, obviously, you know, the assessment will kind of lead where you're going? Are there any particular things that you're doing on a typical patient?
Yeah, there are. Is it appropriate for me to mention certain tools we use?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'll say right off the bat, most of the time, not all the time, everyone's different, but most of the time, generally speaking, the posture of somebody with Parkinson's is sort of flexed forward, stooped forward. Mm-hmm. So an immediate go-to is postural taping using rock tape, because it's my favorite tape and it sticks best. And what you know how it is. I mean, rock tape is great because we are able to, gradually work them towards better posture. We can't do it right away with a bunch of stretch because the center of gravity moved forward. So if we bring them up too fast, they have a risk of falling backwards. But we can start to give them that reminder with a, you know, just put them in an upright position as tall as they can stand, as upright as they can, and just put on a strip on either side of the spine, you know, both sides, tiny bit of stretch maybe. And then when they stoop forward, they get that reminder, I'm stooping forward. And another one I really like is the taping, put the arms in external rotation, have them stand up straight, and then tape basically along the trap line. So when they go into internal rotation, they have that reminder. There are a lot of ways to tape for external rotation, but you will do that because a lot of times, like a lot of humans, including myself, who leans forward if I don't think about it and who also has internal rotation.
You just made me sit up straight.
Yeah, I just stood up straight too. Yeah, so it's fun because again, they're people too. They just happen to be a little bit more forward usually. So that's, everybody loves it. I have never had anyone come to me and say, "Oh, I didn't like the rock. I didn't like the tape. I don't want to use it." The only thing sometimes is taking it off. But you teach them how to do it. And then, or somebody how to do it, and then they can get it off with the least amount of discomfort. But it's so worth it. You know, it lasts 3, 4, sometimes 5 days, and it's a great tool.
Yeah. So that's talk on that a little bit more too. It's a cueing process for anybody who's not taken our FMT basic, which is where we talk about posture taping and taping for posture, I should say, is it's not, the tape's not physically pulling into any position. It's more of that cueing mechanism. Talk about that a little bit, just to kind of describe it to anybody who hasn't really taken that.
Sure. So with this tape, I mean, I just look at it as the same thing as if I was to come up and, you know, can I touch your shoulder? Yes. Okay. So I touch your shoulder on the, or your scapula, and by touching it, it makes you stand up straight because that's a reminder. Hey, stand up straight. Well, the tape does that. That's exactly what it does. It's like a sensory input. Sends information to the brain of where that area of your body is in space, and so that you can make a correction by the information you get from the reminder. And we know that if we have better posture, we move better, right? We walk better, we breathe better, our internal organs function better. So it's really, you know, with vibration, the taping, Dr. Emily has the Noboso products, the textured insoles, or the combination of the insoles and the rock.
Those are really cool.
I even post about this. I'll post before I go on a trip because I'm so excited. I'm going to San Francisco tomorrow. It's like, we got tape with us and we've got the Noboso insoles. And when we get there, we're going to put these things in their shoes and tape them up. And it's a game changer every single time because it's lots of stimulation coming in, waking up these nerves and the feet and giving information through nerves to the brain, through feet, and any kind of taping we do. People feel like they're coming alive. That's actually their feedback. Oh, I feel alive. I can feel things now. And, you know, sometimes people haven't felt certain things in years, like the bottom of their feet.
They don't, yeah.
And then they wake them up, and they wake up through taping. And it's an amazing experience to watch people have, like, immediate change from sensory input.
I think that's the coolest part about it too. It is fast, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I've gotten to a point in my career treating patients is like, if something's not working fairly immediately, I need to do something else because that's just not what they need.
The nervous system, the brain, they're like, it's like the speed of light. I think. I mean, I don't know what it really is, but I know it's really fast because we see, I say without any reservation, we see immediate changes. This is like from the first step, and it's really cool. Even just taping and having them sit up straighter. Let's say it's somebody with restricted mobility, maybe they're confined to a wheelchair, but we're able to tape so they're not so stupid forward. It's still immediate.
And that information that they're getting too is just all the information they really just haven't been getting. And that's what's kind of leading to a lot of what's happening with the movement that they're showing you and, you know, some of the dysfunction that they're being presented with.
Yes.
You mentioned a little bit about vibration therapy, and it's something I don't necessarily use a ton of with a lot of my patients and my clients. I'm interested to see, how does vibration therapy work into working with some of your regular clients and then even working with some of your Parkinson's clients?
Okay, sure. So let's take, for example, any of the vibrating myofascial release products out there. Let me back up for a minute. One of my good friends, who's also my main neurologist mentor in this whole thing, his name is Dr. Alfonso Fasano. He works out of Toronto, but he's from Italy. But anyways, he actually wrote a paper, and it's on my website. On that site you mentioned is a membership site. We can talk about that later, but
sure.
That paper is on there. It's a paper on vibration therapy. Now, in that particular paper, I believe you had people wearing things that would vibrate, and I can't remember the details, but what we know is this. Vibration helps to wake up nerves and send information to the nervous system and the brain. Just like, rock tape, the insoles that Dr. Emily has, or the Nemoso mat. So vibration therapy is very helpful in improving the effectiveness of myofascial release. Mm-hmm. There's a study on that. It's also on my site. I think it was like up to 40% more effective in myofascial release. And we know that rigidity is a motor symptom of Parkinson's. So a lot of times they really benefit from some release techniques and stretching. We also know, so I'll give them like a vibrating ball, for example. If I see somebody come into a workshop, say hi, you know, how's it going? And maybe they have bilateral tremors or unilateral, but whatever it is, I'll just turn on the ball and it's on vibrate and has three different speeds, put it on low or medium, and just give them the ball and have them hold on to it. And almost, not every time, but almost every time, the tremors go away completely or diminish significantly. And that could last 5 or 10 minutes, or it could last 2 or 3 hours. But bottom line is, it's a really nice temporary relief, especially if they're trying to do something with fine motor skills, like write, eat, things like that. You hold on to a ball for 5 minutes before you eat dinner, and then maybe you don't drop your food off your fork or something.
Stupid question. Do you kind of maybe have them go through certain movements while they're holding that ball to kind of stack those treatments?
Yeah. We actually have some of those on our website too. Exercises that combine vibration, holding the ball with certain, you know, maybe a single leg balance thing or reach or cross pattern. We do a lot of cross brain patterns, cross body patterns. So yes, totally. Absolutely.
Do you use a lot of, you mentioned with the vestibular, the barbecue roll, which I love that name. Do you use a lot of rolling patterns for some of your specific Parkinson's patients?
Oh yeah. We pretty much do it with everybody. Okay. I mean, I don't want to get into, sounded like I'm trying to teach primal movement chains or anything, but you know, because that's a really amazing course that Perry has. But really, when it comes down to it, like I said, I didn't make anything up. I take from people who I've learned from and just try to put it all together and do something that really helps. So over the years, as we get older, it just, I know I don't get down on the floor and back up like I used to when I was 5 years old. I mean, I'm 57 now. It doesn't work the same way. Yeah. But I am able to get down now without using hands and get up. I'm not so smooth at it, but I can do it. And so I do practice a lot of rolling patterns myself, but we do it with clients too. We definitely do a lot of primal patterns. For some people, getting into a quadruped position can be really challenging. Mm-hmm. We practice crawling. So we call it the floor is our friend workout, because if you fall, you want to be able to navigate the floor. You want to be able to roll any direction you have to so that you can get into a crawling position and then pull yourself up somehow and get to where you're comfortable and safe. And so these primal patterns are very, very important. We did it in Argentina last week. It was really cool because these two gentlemen with Parkinson's, neither one could get up from the floor without finding something like a chair or something and pull themselves up. But again, when we use our and leverage our body a certain way many times, and in this case, with both these gentlemen, they could do it. They were able to just get into a kneeling position with one knee on the ground and then another leg forward, then just lean forward and push on their knee, you know, basically. And just get up and then get back down. And so they were getting up and down and up and down a whole lot of times on each leg. This way they're able to, you know, fire up a whole bunch of different, muscular, you know, fascial lines and all this stuff, combinations of muscles that they hadn't fired in probably years together, and also regain an ability to get up without pulling themselves up with an object. So, yeah, that's a long answer, but the answer is yes. We do as much of that as we can, because it's really, the fall matrix is another good one too. Are you familiar with that? The fall matrix? Yes. Yeah, so we'll do the fall. For listeners, if they just Google that, you'll find it. The fall matrix, like 12 times down and up.
I know Perry does it a lot, but if I remember correctly, I hope I'm not wrong in saying this, but I think he learned a lot of that from Dan John.
I think so. I don't know Dan, and he's a gentleman I'd really like to meet someday and learn from him, go to a course or something. But yeah,
fantastic author. Yeah, I've not gotten a chance to meet him either, but his books are fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Perry teaches that. That's where I learned it. But yeah,
I learned it from Perry too.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that primal stuff it really is good for us.
It's such a cool thing. And like, let's take names and stuff out of it too. And you know, what people should probably take from what you're saying is it's about teaching people how to move better, things that are more task oriented, getting up and down from the ground. And when you have a Parkinson's patient who is rigid and losing a lot of mobility, these are things that are really good options for them outside of, well, here's a weight, press it over your head 10 times. Something that they're probably going to want to learn how to do better at home.
Yeah, totally. I think one of my favorite parts though of this whole program, or the programming, again, this didn't come from me, this comes from some neurologists who I know, Lisa Morituri at Stony Brook, Dr. Carlos Aguera in San Luis Potosi, Mexico, where I'll be next week again with him, and others too, but we talk about what can we do to improve multitasking, dual tasking abilities, because in a lot of, for a lot of people, but especially Parkinson's, if they get distracted while they're doing something, that can lead to an increase in fall risk or to a fall. So what can we do to help to improve dual tasking abilities? So if you think about it, if you start to do some cognitive exercises while you're doing a focused movement, those two things simultaneously can do a lot to change or to train the brain, right? Developing these new patterns. So for example, maybe I have the person walking a figure eight pattern. Let's say we do the infinity walk where they're walking figure eight around a couple of cones, but off to the side, between the cones, but off to the side is another target they need to look at. So while they're looking at that and they're walking the figure eight, their eyes never come off that object. This is, forces their head to turn, which activates vestibular, forces their eyes to track. So we have visual now. We have a focused movement. We have rotations, which are increased fall risk. And we can throw in some cognitive. So examples would be, let's say it's, we call it direct recall. That's what the neurology world calls it. Direct recall would be anything like, you know, name the capital of, you know, Texas. Oh, Austin. Okay, now spell it forwards. Great. Now spell it backwards. Or do a math equation. Or I have people who say the alphabet backwards really well, so we have to stop because they're too good at it, because they've actually developed the ability now. Those firing patterns have developed where they can say it backwards so fast. We have to switch it up, maybe do every other letter backwards from starting at X or something like that.
You have to constantly challenge them or else it becomes just not, it's not challenging. I just said it.
Yeah, maybe it's a more of a spatial type of thing. This will fire the cerebellum and other areas of the brain in a different way than like a math equation or spelling words or recalling things. Spatial would be, okay, you're doing this figure eight. You've got your eyes and your head doing their thing. Now tell me, how do you get from here to your neurologist's office? Or how do you get from your work to your favorite restaurant? And they have to like get in the car in their mind and drive out the parking lot, turn on, and then name the street, go however many stop signs, stop lights to the next one. Which way do you turn? What street is it? So they have to think in a spatial way. So that actually fires the brain differently. And then there are other things too, like maybe we have them just, they got boxing gloves on and I'm holding mitts and I have like, I cue every punch. You know, I have like, I actually have rock tape on my gloves. I have yellow on one, green on the other. And I'll say, you know, I'll cue every punch. So this is called decision making. Like I say right and they hit right. They cross over with their right and hit my right. Or I say green and that's on my left. So they have to go left hand over to left side, but they're hitting green. So we can cue every punch. We can really get fancy with the boxing stuff in different positions and give different numbers for each position. You know, whether it's uppercut, jab, hook, or I can progress and say, every time I hit, say right, you hit left. Every time I say green, you hit yellow.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I learned that from Dr. Elise Moratori. I mean, it's really cool to progress that. Actually, it's really frustrating sometimes for them, but it's also a lot of fun.
I was going to say, that's pretty amazing like you say right and I have to remember to punch left, because you just take just about anybody and that's going to be super challenging for them. That's probably a great activity for just about anybody, honestly. I might even do that just to kind of get me prepared for the day, that kind of thing.
We do this with everybody too. It's not just people with Parkinson's. We do all this stuff with everybody.
That's the beauty of all this too, is all this stuff is not the norm so much that it's specific to a certain condition. And I think that's just a point we've been trying to make this whole time with a lot of people listening, is like, don't be scared to treat people because they come in with this label or diagnosis. You can still work with them.
Oh yeah. You work with them, especially if you do one thing that's really effective that they've never done. They're going to walk out of there so happy, and they'll be back and you're going to have fun. There's so much you can do cognitive wise. There's so much you can do with memorizing things and then having them repeat it back while they're doing something else. And then, you know, go off and do some other thing and then say, oh, by the way, that thing you memorized, tell me all those things again while they're doing some jumping through a ladder. There is one other area I want to talk about that I cannot forget to mention this.
Sure.
It has to do with elevating the heart rate.
Okay.
So if I had to pick one thing and only one thing for people to do, in general, people to do, but also people with, you know, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, cardio, cardio, cardio. Now, the reason is because when you do cardio for enough time, let's say 20 minutes would be the minimum, according to the neurologist research that I've been given by specific neurologists, 30 minutes would be better and longer would be better. Cardio.
Is there a max?
No, actually there's no max. It just has to do with the person and how long they can go and still not be, like, let's say, fatigued or injured. Okay. Yeah. Good question, though. Thanks for asking that.
Sure.
So the reason elevating the heart rate is so important is because when you do this, we'll talk about intensity in a minute, too. When you do this, what happens is the brain develops this protein / neurotrophic growth factor. It's like a growth hormone. It's called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. BDNF is the short for it. So when BDNF is created, and there's all kinds of research out there on this too, it actually circulates through the brain, and they know that it helps to slow the death of dying brain cells. And there's research showing that it can also give birth to some new brain cells. Where exactly? They're not exactly sure the extent of it. They know for sure, though, that in the hippocampus, you can have new brain cells given birth to. In Alzheimer's disease, the hippocampus is the part that is losing brain cells and dying. And there's a study that came out from the Maria Shriver organization last year. She started up an organization because her father passed away from Alzheimer's maybe about 5 years ago. And that study shows that people with early onset Alzheimer's who do cardio every day actually start to get realize improvements in their memory. So it's really, really cool, because if there's one thing I would recommend besides the medication, by the way, disclaimer, none of what we do is meant to replace medication. This is to complement the medication. So I'll make sure we say that.
Great point.
Sometimes people actually feel like they don't need as much medication, and they actually don't, but that needs to be determined by the neurologist. So it's really cool when we look at this BDNF. They call it miracle growth for the brain. If you read like User's Guide for the Brain or Spark or Go Wild, those are all books by John Ratey, R-A-T-E-Y. He's a Harvard professor. Norman Doidge out of Toronto also wrote two books I love, The Brain That Changes Itself and The Brain's Way of Healing Itself. All these books talk all about retraining the brain to get new neural firing patterns, to improve memory, to improve retention. But they also talk a lot about BDNF and how it can delay onset of a disease and slow progression of diseases. So it's like the coolest stuff in the world.
That is cool, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat. Yeah. I have to ask, this question always comes up when you talk about like growth factors and then, you know, this kind of stuff is supplementation. I don't know if even there is BDNF supplementation, but what's your feeling on the natural production versus the supplementation? If it were to exist.
I don't know if there's anything out there for BDNF. I think if there was, I'd probably know, but I'm not aware of anything.
I didn't think there was, yeah.
But if it was if it worked, yeah, that'd be cool.
Well, maybe it's a poor question, because I'm always curious about that, because there's always such mixed reviews on, you know, melatonin is a popular supplement.
Sure.
And there are people who say, you know, it's an exogenous use of it. It's not the same as when you produce it in your own brain, so it's not going to have the same kind of effect. So I'm just very, very curious what your opinion on something like that would be.
Yeah, I have to admit, that's not my area of expertise.
Okay.
Although next week when I'm in Mexico, I'm meeting with, I go there almost once a month. It's really interesting what we're doing there with a couple different studies. But I'm going to be interviewing for my podcast Cynthia Lopez, who happens to be a dietitian who works only with people with Parkinson's.
Oh, wow.
And they just finished a study on not supplementation, but I know she knows a lot about that. So I can maybe report into you at another time.
that would be cool.
Just dietary. If you look at the work of Dr. John Duda from Veterans Hospital in Philadelphia, a Parkinson's neurologist specialist, I mean, he'll say vegan all the way. Vegan, 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 all the way. And so really? Cynthia will say that too, because the results, the people realize and improvements in their gut health, their overall health, their brain health, improves greatly on a vegan diet. I am not a vegan. I tried. I really like the concept. I just I don't know. I know it's there's a lot of arguments about it too. I mean, there are arguments about sure. People should eat meat, you know, and I have to agree. I'd say that there are people who absolutely have to. So I don't want to get in too much to dietary stuff, but I know that the studies showing that the vegan stuff is just fantastic for people with any kind of neurological disorder. There are some plants they have to be careful of not to eat too much that contain naturally occurring dopamine, so it can actually affect their medications if they eat, like, the fava bean.
Oh, yeah.
There's some others I can't remember right now, but they'll find that, I think Cindy mentioned to me that eating meat, if you eat meat, if you have Parkinson's, it's better to eat later. Don't eat meat for lunch. And it has to do with medications and the optimal timing between eating meat and when you want your medications to be most effective. But yeah, that's a path I really haven't gone down as far as studying details about supplements. But There is information out there.
It's a really cool track, because I think a lot of conditions, and even just subclinical, you know, movement dysfunction, there's a lot to nutrition as a huge part of correction and treatment that I think is, I hate to say overlooked, but I just feel like it's not as emphasized as other things.
Oh, I agree. You know, I have to say, it's the reason I went back to school for nutrition, but that was just your basic nutrition. It didn't go deep into what I really am interested in, which is, I'm not sure how to say it exactly, but if you were to read here's a good thing. If you were to read the book called The End of Alzheimer's by Dr. Dale Bredesen, he's from Southern California. I met him last year at a Maria Shriver luncheon in New York, and we actually got to spend some time together. He talks about how gut inflammation, the food we eat, especially a lot of the processed stuff, this will cause a disease like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's to develop. And it will live in your gut for 10 to 20 years before it travels to the brain and actually manifests any sort of symptoms that are visible or recognizable. So, I mean, theoretically, I could have Alzheimer's in my gut right now, and in 10 years, actually manifest a symptom by forgetting things.
That is super scary to think about.
Yeah, no, it really is. Yeah, but that book, The End of Alzheimer's, yes, it talks about Alzheimer's, but it has to do with everybody. It has to do with Parkinson's. It has to do with not having any disease. It's a great, great book. He goes a lot into dietary stuff on that. So that's a read I recommend for everybody.
Very cool. Yeah. You've mentioned so many awesome resources, actually. Is there any other things that you could recommend if anybody wants to read up a little bit more about the general neurology to kind of some of the things you do, or even specifically Parkinson's?
Let's see. Okay, so my very favorites, because it all has to do with the brain, which supports all the information I get from the neurologists who I actually have worked with or collaborated with or interviewed. My favorites are any book written by John Rady, R-A-T-E-Y, any book by him, any book by Norman Doidge, D-O-I-D-G-E, Dale Bredesen's book. I think it's Bredesen, The End of Alzheimer's. She's only written one book, and it's great.
Okay.
If you get on some of these, like NCBI.com or PubMed,
yep,
you can start looking at some research. Kyle Stoll over at Trigger Point told me about this thing called, the app is called READ, Read. It's free, and there's so much great information there that's actually published works by people in the medical profession. And then I have to shameless self-promotion. I'm writing a book.
Go for it.
And a lot of what I've learned has come from people who've contributed to the book. I mean, Perry wrote the foreword. It's beautiful. It's so nice of him. I've had various neurologists who have written, and they've actually given me a lot of research through emails and documents they've sent. The books I recommended are some of the great ones. I happen to like those the best, but there's so much stuff out there. You know, get online, get on Google Scholar, get on NCBI, get on PubMed, start looking. And you could just learn so much that way.
Yeah, and if you know what you're looking for, you can really apply it to working with and help them in so many different ways.
Totally, totally, 100%.
Awesome. Well, Carl, tell us a little bit about some of the other stuff that you're doing. You've got your website, you've got also your podcast. Tell us a little bit about that, where we can find it.
Okay, yeah. Let's see. If you go to... Okay, we'll start with the website. The website I started a few months ago. It's a membership-based site. It's $14.99 per month. There are three different plans on there, and I don't have the pricing in front of me, but if a six-month plan would be less, and a one-year plan would even be less. But okay. Basically, it's my way of trying to reach the world with education that people have requested, actually, and I just haven't been able to go to all these places. I want to, but I just can't physically do it. So rather than wait to go in a couple of years somewhere, the site is up. And now we have a couple hundred members, so it's really honored that people are joining, and I'm so happy they're pleased. Because so far, once they get on there, they stay. So I'm very happy about that. The book, which I haven't decided the name of it yet, but it'll have something to do with Parkinson's in the title. The whole idea of my program, which I never mentioned, and this book is, you know, when we look at where, let's say, medical care, physiotherapy, whatever, cuts off or is lacking for anybody, if we look at the void between that and functional life, there is this huge void a lot of times where we can come in and we can educate and we can help people to do things they wouldn't know how to do and they can't get from their physios or their doctor because maybe insurance won't cover, they don't have the money, and you know, that's the way it is. And so the book and the course that I teach, if they go to Parkinson's Regeneration Training.com. It's a long one. Parkinson's Regeneration Training.com. They'll get information, see promotional video, see where we are around the world, and they can come to a workshop. When the book comes out, that's designed to be hopefully just the best resource that I can possibly make it be. Now, that's saying a lot because there's a lot of good stuff out there. The whole reason I put the book together and the course, though, is because what I found, first of all, I've never seen a bad Parkinson's program, ever. However, okay. I feel like they're incomplete. And, okay. And mine's not even as complete as I want. I'm always wanting to add more and make it better and better and better and the most kick-ass program possible to make the biggest difference possible. But it's designed to be the most comprehensive workshop, informational website, education website, and book. Because I want to change the world. That's my goal. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty lofty goal, but it's actually what I want to do, you know? I want to make an impact to help people because that makes me feel really good.
That is probably the best reason to do that, I think.
I mean, it really is kind of self-indulgent too in a way, but I love it when people move better, feel better, and they go from feeling defeated to feeling like a fighter. Yeah. That turns me on. That's like the best thing in the world.
I love it. I love it. What's the name of your podcast? Maybe you want to check that out too.
See, if you go to iTunes, go to Physio Chains, like kinetic chains. So Physio, P-H-Y, I can't spell right now. It's Physio Chains.
P-H-Y-S-I-O Chains.
Yes. Thank you. If you go to YouTube, this is terrible, but I actually can't remember. I just post it all the time. If you just go to search Carl Sterling, Carl with a K, just go to, you'll see interviews pop up. You'll just see a lot.
Yeah, honestly, if anybody just puts you in Google, you will pretty much find everything that Carl's doing right now, because he is up high on the search engine.
Well, I mean, I'm glad, because we want to reach people. We've added instructors to our team. We have Allison, Phyllis, and Eliza, and Samuel, and Julie. And in Mexico, we have Danielle and Jessica. Silvana is in Cordoba, Argentina, where we were last week. And Ruben, my good friend Ruben's in Costa Rica. So we can teach in Spanish or English.
Excellent. Excellent.
And it's really, yeah, it's just been an amazing experience.
Well, it's been some really great information. Carl, where can somebody get you on social media if they wanted to get hold of you?
Let's see. We have the Physio Chains Instagram. There's three of me on. They're all mine. These three are all me on Instagram. The Physio Chains is the one I use the most.
Okay.
We have Facebook. Neuro rehabilitation page. Neuro rehabilitation / neuropsychomotor training. That's the name of the page. Let's see. I don't really do any other social media. Instagram seems to be the most popular right now.
Yeah, it's kind of the easiest too.
It really is. Yeah,
for me at least.
Hashtags help a lot.
Yes, they do. Absolutely.
I'm drinking coffee, by the way, because I know you and I are both coffee fans.
Oh yes, I love seeing some of your coffee posts there too.
Yeah. If you ever get sick of me, if you ever get sick of me tagging you in a coffee post, just let me know. But it's kind of fun.
No, I love it. Because you never know if I'm going to end up being where you're going to be, and it's going to help me someday.
You were in my hometown like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I was in San Diego teaching.
I know, yeah. We just missed each other when I was in Syracuse.
Yeah, so Phyllis, who trains a lot of my people when I'm gone.
And she's
also an instructor. Yeah, she's amazing. Phyllis is amazing. Are
you going to be? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, where am I going to?
No, you go ahead and talk about Phyllis.
Oh, no, she just, you know, she's so good with clients, and she's also an instructor. So people see her out there teaching these workshops.
Excellent.
We're in San Francisco this weekend. We're in Mexico, two trips to Mexico in the next 3 weeks, three different cities.
Oh, wow. I love Mexico.
We'll be presenting at Dr. Emily's Barefoot Summit with talking about the brain, cognitive training for dual tasking and fall reduction. We have things coming up in, the dates aren't on the site yet, but North Jersey, Los Angeles, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., all those this fall, be in Paris, London, and Glasgow, Scotland. In November, and Long Island in December. So yeah, if they go to ParkinsonsRegenerationTraining.com, you can see where we're going to be. And please come attend a workshop, because we all learn from each other, and we can all help change lives.
Absolutely. And if anybody is looking to reach out to Carl, check him out on social media. If you want to sign up or take a look at where his courses are going to be, ParkinsonsRegenerationTraining.com. And then also Physio Change Education is the membership site, correct?
Yes. Yes.
So, all right. Well, check out Carl on any one of those venues. Check out that podcast. And Carl, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. That was fantastic. So much great information.
Oh, well, thank you. I've learned so much from you too, and your posts and things I've read that you've put up there. So I appreciate you asking me to do this. It's an honor for me, and I'm excited to meet you in the future at some point.
Yeah, I hope we can meet face to face. It's an honor to talk to you. And again, I really do appreciate your time.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Wow. Carl is such a positive guy. You can't not feel motivated talking with him. My favorite takeaway from this discussion was how everything that Carl does with his clients can be done with anyone, regardless of their training ability or their diagnosis. If you want to incorporate more neurology into your training, and you should, check out some of Carl's stuff. PhysioChainsEducation.com, ParkinsonsRegenerationTraining.com. Check out the PhysioChains podcast on Apple Podcasts or search Carl Sterling on YouTube. And check out Carl on Instagram at PhysioChains and then on Facebook at NeuroRehabilitation/NeuroPsychomotorTraining. Carl's got a lot of great content up there. You can find a lot of great stuff just by searching his name. Well, that's it for the Rock Tape podcast. Don't forget, getting 15% off your next order of tape, topicals, mobility tools, and apparel at shop.rocktape.com. Just use the promo code ROCKCAST, ROCKCAST, ROCKCAST. And please don't forget, join us in Miami for Rockstock 2018, October 27th through the 28th. It's going to be movement, music, fun, laughter, and yes, there will be CEUs. Go to rocktape.com, use the code RTPodcasters2018 for $100 off registration. Please come out and see us. We've got a lot of great speakers. I'm going to be speaking as well, too. I'm going to be talking about environmental resilience. I am so excited to be there, and I really want to see you and meet you guys and talk to you about all the cool stuff you're doing with your patients and your clients. Again, thank you so much for downloading the Rock Tape podcast. I will see you next time.